This is sheer number 6 in a 10-part series about the Asara Haruge Malchus, known as the 10 martyrs, 10 rabbis who were brutally murdered by the Romans during a roughly 70-year span, commencing with the destruction or the time surrounding the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash in 70 AD and concluding around 130-132 with the Bar Kokhba rebellion. We enshrine these deaths and these people primarily on Tisha B'Av, which commemorates and mourns the period surrounding their death and the destruction which occurred on Tisha B'Av. We recite a kinnah on Tisha B'Av about their death, but we also discuss them on Yom Kippur in one of the slichos in Musaf. One of the martyrs was known as Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Now he is placed towards the end of the process. He's a colleague and a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva. And interestingly enough, we have very little Torah recorded in his name. He's known as a chassid. Very often when the Gemara says Maisa bechassid echad, it's attributed to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Some say it's Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai. It's fascinating that either way it is something which surrounds a person named Yehuda, because later on in history, in the medieval period, there was a Rabbi Yehuda who also took that name of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, Germany. And of course the word Chassid, both in the 2nd century AD and the medieval period in Germany, did not mean the word Chassid that we associate with the Hasidic movement. It meant someone with, known for his extreme and very, very careful studied piety. So he was a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva and of Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. This is Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. We have very few statements of his in Shas. Intriguingly, of the statements we have, two surround very technical details about Erevin or topics relating to Erevin on Shabbos. So it's likely that he was an expert in the laws of Erevin, and that's why he was cited. We do have a debate between him and Rabbi Akiva surrounding whether a Baal Teshuvah should explicitly delineate his sins or should leave them anonymous and nondescript. From a pragmatic standpoint, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is correct. Delineation and a full-scale and thorough vidoy will enable and facilitate the process of tshuva. Rabbi Akiva felt it's better to be more private. Ashrei nesui pesha kesui chata'a. So Rabbi Akiva felt that a distance from chait would be healthier from a psychological standpoint, recognizing it's something we shouldn't speak about. Today we live in an era in which that's an important question. There's certain issues maybe that shouldn't be spoken about, even though they should be dealt with in more private fashion. I think part of the casualty of the Facebook era is that I'm not sure that people still have that ability for discretion and for discrimination between what's important to speak about but what frameworks, whether it's public or private. However, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava did play a pivotal role in maintaining the Masara at an extremely vulnerable point. The wrath of the Roman suppression became heavier and heavier. They recognized Torah as the core spirit of the Jewish people that allowed them to resist and defy the Roman Empire. They issued decrees, the Romans, against the study of Torah in public, which is how Rabbi Akiva was executed or incarcerated. But they also got very, very detailed. It wasn't just Torah study which was banned, but it was also delivering smicha. They realized that if the chain of smicha could be perpetuated, then Jewish authority and Torah authority could be maintained, Jewish courts could operate, and the autonomy of the Jewish community would be assured. and they sought to eliminate smicha. And the truth is, at some point they succeeded, because very early on in the days of the Amorim, we see the disappearance of smicha. To what degree it was Roman persecution, to what degree it was just the exile itself, but it's clear that in Bavel, smicha disappears. Now, Rabbi Akiva had trained 5 Talmidim after infamously losing 24,000. But these 5 Talmidim who Rabbi Akiva trained really set the world on fire. They really changed the future of Torah. And as a testament to Rabbi Akiva's perseverance and the ability for him to maintain optimism and confidence even in the face of such tragedy, Rabbi Akiva is always that visionary who sees beyond the next ridge. But Rabbi Akiva couldn't give them smicha. Now, it's not clear why he couldn't. It may be that he was already martyred, and that's why he couldn't. Because Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava clearly outlives Rabbi Akiva, because he processes Rabbi Akiva's martyring, and I'll talk about this a bit later. Either way, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is facing a predicament. If he gives smicha, then he risks his own life, and interestingly enough, he risks the life of the city within which he'll deliver smicha and the immediate areas in the vicinity. The Romans were so aggressive in their attempts to eliminate smicha that they decreed that the deliverer of smicha, the recipient of smicha, the city in which the smicha would be delivered, and the towns nearby. And yet he delivers smicha to these 5 students, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua, and some say Rabbi Nehemiah. And these were the people who really changed the face of Torah. Rabbi Meir forms the cornerstone of the Mishnah. Most Mishnayos are citations of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir also teaches Rabbi Danasi. Rabbi Shimon is the cornerstone of the Sifrei. Rabbi Yehuda is the cornerstone of the Sifra. So Rabbi Akiva essentially perpetuates the next generation of Torah teaching, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava grants him smicha. Recognizing the danger of delivering smicha in a civilized and populated area, he chooses a relatively desolate area, equidistant between 2 cities, so no city should be incriminated as the site of this smicha. And he delivers smicha to these 5 students of Rabbi Akiva. And the Romans are hot on the tail. And they discover this, and in one final act of defiance and martyrdom, he encourages his students to run while he remains behind as a decoy, distracting the Romans. Evidently, maybe the passage through the canyon was very narrow, and if he remained there, it would be difficult for the Romans, either physically or just they would see him and become enraged. But either way, his heroism actualizes, materializes, and as these 5 future newly minted Rabbanim flee, he remains behind, and the Romans literally riddle his body with 300 spears. So it's a very, very graphic exchange of his own life on behalf of his 5. It's immediate, it's not just theoretical. They run, he remains. They continue, the legacy of Torah, his body is riddled with 300 spears. What's also fascinating about Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, in particular in his lifetime, is that he's a processor of this entire experience of the Aseret Hagei Malchus. I've tried to stress so often in the series that the brutal death and murder of these 10 Rabbanim were iconic. They were forerunners or foreshadowing events of a very ominous reality that, quite frankly, not everyone was able to process. We look back on history and we're able to connect the Roman Gaulus to events in Sefer Bereishis, to the promises that Yitzchak delivers to Esau that he will have his day and he will subdue his brother Yaakov, and then Yaakov would have his day. So we're able to connect the dots. But hindsight is always 20/20 vision. And when you're living through a process, it's hard to trace it to prophetic realities. In part, this was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's plea to some of the younger fanatics and vigilantes who insisted on opposing Rome, that evidently this had divine authorship, that history had a certain expectation and role for the Romans, and by resisting it was futile. And it became more convincing and compelling once the Asar HaRugei Malchus, the Rabbanim, were being slaughtered. Evidently, this was supernatural and disproportionate. It wasn't just the Romans temporarily subduing a culture that could potentially respond and resist. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is the one who articulates some of this recognition. And he does it twice, because he receives news of the slaughter of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, the elder, and Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, the Kohen Gadol. This is all recorded in Maseches Simachos. And they, as I've said before, and I've given shiurim on them in their own personal lives and their contributions, they are martyred relatively early in the process, early stage, more or less around the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And then he lives through Rabbi Akiva's brutal death. And he was a colleague of Rabbi Akiva, and to a degree was now a multi-generational process that Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava identified. And without getting into the language he uses is a little bit different. In the case of Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel talks about the fact that Peronos is inevitable. In the case of Rabbi Akiva, he says Rabbi Akiva is a mo-face. We would say an icon for what happened, a template, what will occur to other people in the future. But through his eyes, we live through that, what we would call awakening, or that acknowledgement that this was not just random or transient, but it marked the dominance of Rome and this arrival, the commencement of this long night of Gullus that everyone knew would emerge at some point in the historical timeline.